Biggin had a dozen men on horseback with him, all hoppers or hopper kin. A wagon trailed a couple of hundred yards behind. It would take the sheriff's body back to town for proper services and burial. Approaching the farmhouse, Deputy Harp gave Biggin a troubled look.
Hadn't we better go in slow and careful?
That outlaw will be miles away from here by now. But we'll pick up his trail and ride him down like a lobo wolf. Soon as we do right by poor old Oscar.
Old Oscar ought to be grateful to him, Biggin thought, rubbing his sore arm where Lige's bullet had grazed it. He'd made a hero out of him. Every hopper woman in town would cry at his funeral, and some that weren't even kin.
Reckon why that robber picked this place to hide out?
Like as not, Landon's put him up to it. Probably had him hired to kill some of us and keep their own hands clean. And me and Oscar flushed him before he had time to do any such a thing.
Damn shame your horse went to pitching you when you tried to protect Oscar. You could have finished that killer then and there.
Now, don't you worry, we'll get him sooner or later. But everybody better remember, we're up against a murderer who won't stop at nothing. He won't give any mercy, and he's got no mercy coming to him. You shoot to kill.
What about the boy?
You just remember that he put a bullet in Oscar, too. He's already mined for life traveling with an outlaw daddy. He's probably carrying the trace of a noose around his neck.
Truscott lay where Biggin had left him, except that he had been rolled over onto his back, his arms folded across his chest, and his hat covering his face.
Odd, ain't it? That an outlaw would do such a thing for a sheriff? You reckon he felt any pain?
I doubt he ever knew what hit him had happened so fast.
Biggin remembered the pleading look in Truscott's eyes before the second shot. The memory made him shiver. He turned in the saddle to hide the emotion from the posse members. Harp dismounted and stepped up close to the house.
Did Oscar ever reach the porch?
No, he fell right where he is now.
And you must have hit somebody. There's blood up here.
Biggin slid from the saddle and walked over to look. The stain had soaked into the dry old wood. He studied it and felt a quick uplift. Maybe he had shot the old reprobate after all. He hoped it was a fatal wound. The boy would soon be caught wandering around by himself. Given any kind of chance, Biggin would see to it that he didn't live long enough to testify about what had really happened. Harp circled the house.
I found their trail. Tracks are headed north.
Funny they'd go that way. Was I them, I'd head for Mexico.
Maybe they figure on some of the Landons helping them. We ought to wipe out the whole damn litter, at least run them out of the county.
But the first thing we got to do is catch these killers. Afterwards, we can deal with Jace Landon. We'll do what we had figured to do when we had him in our jail.
We don't know where the Rangers took him.
There's still one Ranger in town, the one called Brackett. He'll know.
He won't tell.
Oh, yes, he will. One way or another, he will.
Sergeant Holloway had returned to the San Saba River camp. Rusty sent the captain a wire explaining the situation and requesting permission for him and Andy to guard Jace until the circuit judge reached town. The captain wired back, advising that additional Ranger help would be sent if requested. Flora was on her long daily visit to her husband. Tom Blessing didn't allow Flora direct contact with her husband. She did her visiting from a cell 10 feet away from Jace's. She couldn't even hand him tobacco. Either Tom or Rusty would examine it first, then pass it on to Jace. She walked to the front of the office and looked at Rusty.
Rusty, Jace would feel better if you would ask the captain to send Brother Dick.
Dick would take it hard, watching Jace tried for murder. We all know what the outcome will be.
Having him there would be a comfort to Jace. I'd feel better, too.
It's against my better judgment, but I'll wire the captain.
Flora nodded and headed out the door. After she was out of earshot, Andy glanced at Rusty.
Somebody said Jace and Dick both courted Flora.
It's a shame she made the wrong choice.
When Jace is gone, she'll have a second chance. Maybe she'll take it.
I knew that Farley Brackett was some taking with her, but I didn't know you were too. She's 10 years too old for you.
It's not that way at all. It's just that she's got a lot of gumption. You have to admire that.
You'd better admire her from a distance. She'd shoot you in a minute if it would save her husband.
I'd call that gumption.
Lord help you, boy. I'm going to go write up the report to send with that request.
Andy shook his head as he left the sheriff's office. In front of the jail, he found Farley Brackett leaning against the door, his grim face bruised and swollen, cut in half a dozen places.
Farley? What the hell are you doing here?
Farley tried to walk in by himself, but fell to his hands and knees. Andy rushed to help. He lifted Farley to his feet and held him to keep him from falling down.
You look like you've been drug at the end of a rope.
Oh, where's Rusty? Gotta see Rusty.
He's here. Rusty!
Farley had difficulty in keeping his legs under him. With Andy's support, he stumbled into the office. Rusty sat at Tom's desk, and Tom lay napping on a cot, one arm over his face to shield his eyes from the light. He had stood watch for half the previous night. Awakening, he pushed up onto his elbow.
What in the world?
Rusty strode across the room to help. Tom arose from the cot and motioned for them to place Farley on it. Rusty glared at the damage to Farley's face.
Who did this to you?
Biggin. Who else? There's hell to pay over at Hoffman's Crossing. The Hoffmans are tied up on a manhunt, but when they get done with that, they'll be coming for Jace.
They know where we brought him?
They do now. Biggin had himself a set of brass knuckles. I didn't have the strength to give much of a fight.
Nobody could blame you for telling him.
I didn't tell him nothing. But the little fella at the mine's livery stable spilled it all. He had heard you all talk enough that he knew you brought Jace over here. I ought to have killed him when I had the chance. I will yet.
Better not. Remember, he's the deputy sheriff.
Worse than that, he's the acting sheriff now by order of Judge Hopper. Truscott's dead. According to Biggin, it was old man Tennyson and his boy that done it. He put out an order to kill them both on sight.
What about Scooter?
Dunno, Andy. Biggin said him and the sheriff went out to make an arrest. The old man and his boy shot it out with him.
Scooter wouldn't do such a thing.
It don't matter whether he did or not. Biggin put out the word to take no chances, to shoot the both of them on sight.
Oh, he must be lying.
Like as not, but most of Hoppers Crossing believes him. They're hunting high and low like a pack of coyotes. I wouldn't bet a Confederate dollar on the daddy or the boy, either one, living to get away.
Rusty, we gotta do something.
Lige Tennyson picked his own road.
I doubt that Scooter had any say in the matter.
We wouldn't have any idea where to look for him. Anyway, it's our assignment to guard Jace.
For the moment, Andy hated Jace Landon and Lige Tennyson both. Most of all, he hated Biggin Hopper.
Hey, could y'all let me back into that cell? I forgot my handkerchief.
You been keeping that good woman in a cell?
We're trying to make sure she stays good. She passed a gun to him once. We don't want her doing it again.
I didn't know anybody figured that out besides me.
You think you're the only one around here who's got any brains? Come on in, Flora.
Flora walked in and stopped dead at the sight of Farley's battered face, fury entering her eyes.
I don't suppose he fell off a horse.
It wasn't a horse that done this to me. It was a jackass.
Turn Jace loose for a few days, and I promise you Biggin won't trouble anybody again.
I'm sore tempted, but how could we know Jace wouldn't head south for Mexico?
You could hold me here in his place. He'd turn himself in again, like he did before.
Maybe, maybe not. Jace knows Tom Blessing wouldn't mistreat you like Biggin did. And Tom couldn't hold you for long since there's no charges against you.
No telling who all Biggin is liable to stomp on before he's through. What Hopper's Crossing needs is a few funerals, starting with Biggin and his Uncle Judd. Give Jace a chance, and he'll see to it.
Once I get my strength back, I'll be glad to see to it myself.
Scooter swayed from one side to the other in the saddle.
Stay awake, son. You don't want to fall and start the bleeding again. It's taking too long to get it stopped in the first place. Scooter? Damn. You ain't sleepy. You got the fever. I gotta find help for you. Damn soon.
Because the bullet had passed through, Lige had hoped his son would be able to keep riding until they had put more distance behind them. But instead of starting the healing process, the wound was getting uglier, and Scooter's fever was rising. Lige's hopes for escape had all but vanished. At first, he had circled around a few farmhouses, fearing word had gone out that he'd killed the sheriff. Now that he made up his mind to accept the risk, he had ridden for miles without seeing a house. He had only a general idea where he and Scooter were. He hoped they'd crossed into another county where Biggin would have less influence. He had started north, hoping to throw off, or at least delay, pursuit. Then had turned westward, where there would be fewer settlements, fewer people to witness their fight. That, however, complicated his search for someone to help Scooter. He had given up the notion of riding only in the dark of night. He traveled boldly in the daylight. At last, he saw a small cabin. Smoke drifted from the chimney.
Hold on, son. Maybe these folks can help you.
He then saw an old black man chopping wood behind the cabin. Disappointment left a sour taste in his mouth.
Damn little help we'll get here.
The old man straightened up and leaned on the axe while he rubbed his sleeve across his eyes in an effort to wipe away the sweat and sharpen his vision. Then he came limping out to meet Lige and the boy.
That young'un looks to be in a bad way.
He's in need of help. Any white folks living close by?
Not close enough by the looks of him. There's the Shannon place over yonder way, but nobody's home. And there's old man Fowler Gaskin. You wouldn't take a stray dog to him.
What about town?
It's a right smart of a ways. Too far for the boy to keep riding horseback, I'm afraid. And I ain't got a wagon. Bring him in the house. I'll see if there's something I can do for him.
Lige had always considered it gospel truth that black folks were supposed to be subservient. He took the old man's blackness as an indication that the cabin was probably filthy and infested with vermin. The thought of taking Scooter in there repelled him. Yet he saw no choice.
I'm gonna need hot water to clean him up.
That won't take long. I got plenty of firewood, and there's water in the well.
Lige dismounted and carefully pulled Scooter from his saddle and into his arms, carrying him into the small house. The cabin's single room was bedroom and kitchen all together. Lige was pleasantly surprised to see that the place was clean.
You got a woman, I suppose.
Never had no chance to get married.
Place looks too neat not to have a woman in it.
I used to belong to Mr. Isaac York. When he was sober, he was particular about keeping the place up. Now, he wasn't sober much, but I got in the habit of sweeping and scrubbing for the times when he was.
Lige gave the cot a doubting look. He distrusted it, but was in no position to be choosy. He gently placed Scooter on the top blanket and pulled down the bloody trousers. Sight of the wound made him sick to his stomach.
How about that hot water?
It'll be coming in a minute. What happened to this boy?
It's best you don't know. Man, you can't tell him anything.
Well, he's been shot, that's plain to see. And I'm guessing you're the ones the Rangers told me about.
The Rangers? What did they tell you?
Well, they told me about a man and a boy that robbed a bank out west someplace. I ain't got no money in a bank here or anywhere else, so it don't scrape no skin off of my nose.
The boy had nothing to do with it.
It don't seem likely he would, him being so young.
How often do the Rangers come by here?
I ain't seen one in a while. Rusty Shannon was the last to come by.
Rusty?
He's the neighbor I was telling you about. A hailstorm beat down his crops, so he's gone back to Ranger until spring planting time.
I met Shannon. He didn't have a whole lot to say.
Hard times been dogging his steps like a hungry wolf. He was all set on marrying, but his woman got shot and killed. He's a booger against men that breaks the law.
And boys, too?
He got a soft spot for hard luck boys. I mind the time he caught a white boy riding with the Comanches. They had stole him when he was little, but Rusty took him in and treated him like a brother. First time I seen Andy, he's about the size of your boy here. Turned into a fine young man.
Andy? Would his last name be Pickard?
Well, sure would.
He was kind of my boy, Scooter.
I ain't surprised. It would be his way of paying back for what all Rusty done to help him.
Lige tried washing away the blood, but his stomach turned over. He had seen lots of bloodshed in his day, but this time it was different. This was his son.
I'll clean him up for you. Oh, this looks bad. I wish I had whiskey to pour in that bullet hole.
We need to cauterize that wound. Else it's have to go to gangrene.
I couldn't do that to this boy. I know how much it hurts. One time, Mr. Isaac got drunk and took a notion that I ought to be branded like he branded his critters. It's a long time before I could sit in a chair.
Yeah, I'm his daddy. It's my place to do it. You got a butcher knife I can heat?
Reluctantly, Shanty fetched a knife from his cabinet.
I'll hold him for you, but I'm shutting my eyes.
Scooter had been unconscious. He awakened at the touch of the hot blade.
Oh!
With tears in his eyes, Lige kept pressing against the wound until the smell of burning flesh became too much for him. He rushed out of the cabin and threw up. He re-entered after a few minutes.
Oh. The boy's unconscious again. He ain't feeling nothing. I rubbed some hog lard over the burn.
Is there a doctor in town that we can trust?
Yeah, folks around here swear by Dr. Parsons.
I'd be obliged if you would fetch him.
Like as not, I'll run into Sheriff Tom Blessing. What'll I say?
I don't see why you'd have to say anything.
Oh, I never was no great shakes at lying. Folks see through me in a minute. But maybe Mr. Tom won't ask me nothing.
I hope not. Folks have already accused me of shooting one sheriff. No telling how high they'd hang me if it was two.
The doctor spent an hour with Scooter. Lige watched him intently, looking for some sign of what he was thinking. But Parsons had the blank expression of an expert poker player.
What's his chances?
Well, it'd be better if somebody competent had seen to him sooner. He lost a lot of blood, and what he didn't lose is in some danger of blood poisoning.
You saying I'm fixing to lose him?
I'd be lying if I told you he's gonna be fine. But he's young and generally healthy. He's got that much on his side. I would caution you against moving him for a few days.
This ain't no place for him. Sorry, Shanty, but that's the way I see it.
The doctor shook his head and beckoned Lige to the side. Shanty taking the hint and busying himself settling the boy.
There's not a kinder-hearted man in this country than Shanty York. You're letting his color cancel out your better judgment.
I can't overlook it, though. It's the way I was raised.
It got a lot of good men killed during the big war. For this boy's sake, I hope you put those notions aside. At least for a few days, until he's stronger and better able to move.
Looks like I ain't got much choice.
Lige turned back and found Scooter half awake. He placed a gentle hand on the boy's shoulder.
Doc, there's people looking for us. I'd rather we wasn't found.
I knew who you were as soon as Shanty told me about you. Lawmen over half the state are on the hunt. The claim is that you two shot the sheriff over at Hopper's Crossing.
But it ain't true. It was the sheriff's own deputy done the shooting, and he shot my boy, too.
Lige couldn't tell whether Parsons believed or disbelieved him. That poker face gave nothing away. The doctor shrugged.
It's been a long time since anything good came out of that county. Almost any funeral over there could be considered a community improvement. Do you know I'm obliged by law to report any treatment I do on gunshot wounds?
I remember when private matters stayed private.
Seems that the government pokes its nose into just about everything these days. But I might get so busy that I don't report it for a while.
What do I owe you, Doctor?
Did you come by that money honestly?
Some folks might argue either way about that.
Just drop a couple dollars in the plate the next time you go to church.
If Scooter comes out of this, I'll let him do it.
Doc Parsons nodded and tipped his hat to Shanty and saw himself out. Lige glanced at Shanty.
You a Bible reading man?
I don't read it exactly, but I listen to the word any time I get the chance.
You reckon the Lord allows for a righteous killing?
You thinking about that deputy sheriff?
He does lay heavy on my mind.
An hour past dark, Biggin rode back into Hopper's Crossing with a volunteer posse of six men. Horses and riders were so weary that they seemed barely able to hold their heads up. It had been another hard day's ride, and a futile one. Biggin had mistakenly thought it would be easy to track the fugitives and put so many holes in them that their bodies wouldn't float. He had wanted to continue the chase if it killed half the horses, but the exhausted posse members had threatened to rebel. Even Harp had argued their side. If they couldn't find the trail in the daylight, they sure as sin wouldn't find it in the dark. Biggin knew they were right, though he had threatened to beat up Cousin Wilbur, who'd been a chronic bellyacher all his life. He hoped that Lige Tennyson's wound was serious enough to make him go to ground somewhere. After that, the boy would be easy. Sure, some people would balk at shooting him, but Biggin had told everyone who would listen that the boy had participated in the killing of Oscar Truscott. Once a young wolf got the taste of blood, he was beyond taming. Best thing was to shoot him at the first opportunity. So far as he could tell, no one had doubted his story. Not even a Landon had spoken out against him. But if Lige and his boy had a chance to tell their version often enough, doubts might begin to surface. Slowly, everyone dismounted and stretched out their sore backs.
I'll expect every one of you to be here and ready with fresh horses at first light. Bring enough grub to last you for 3 or 4 days.
He saw a lot of eye rolling and knew that half of them wouldn't show up. Things had come to a pretty pass when a man could no longer count on loyalty from his kin. After the others led their horses away, Harp gave him a level look.
You never did like Oscar in the first place. Looks like we ought to be taking care of Jace Landon instead of chasing over hell and half of Texas looking for that old man and his boy. The truth be told, they done you a favor. They made you the sheriff.
You getting cold feet, Harp?
No, but I'm getting an awful sore butt. You have any idea how far we've ridden?
We'll ride 1,000 miles if we have to. Jace ain't going nowhere. We'll get around to him. But we got this other business to finish first.
If you say so. Was I you? I'd be giving that Tennyson a medal.
You got no sense of justice.
You sure you ain't just making a show for Oscar's widow?
What kind of man do you think I am? She's blood kin.
She's good looking. I ain't seen nothing yet that would make you back away from a good looking woman.
Biggin was tempted to lay the barrel of his new pistol against the side of Harp's head. But Harp was a better tracker than Biggin. He needed him. Someday when all this was over, he would teach Harp a whole new code of conduct. He settled for glaring at the man and stalking off, yanking his horse along by the reins. As he walked by the darkened courthouse, Judge Hopper walked out and jerked his head in silent command. Biggin tied his mount to the hitching post and walked over.
I gather that you had no luck?
Oh, we had luck, all right. All bad.
This is the third day you've been out on the chase. Don't you think that's enough?
It won't be enough till we get them.
No telling how far they've traveled by now. Everybody in town knows you and Oscar didn't like one another. Some are beginning to ask why you've let yourself become obsessed with this hunt.
I got my reasons.
And I can guess what they are. But if enough other people start to guess the same thing, you're liable to be in more trouble than you can handle.
You saying I ought to quit the chase?
I'm saying they're probably in another jurisdiction by now. Let somebody else capture them.
I can't. I got to be the one that does it.
I've seen some smart men convicted in my court, all because they got in too much of a hurry and were careless enough to leave witnesses behind. Good night, nephew.
Biggin watched his uncle walk away and become lost in the darkness. At that moment, he realized that his uncle had served notice in an oblique way. If Biggin got into trouble over Oscar Truscott, he was on his own. Judd Hopper's court would be of no help. Lige stood in the middle of Shanty's garden, chopping weeds. He'd been a little put off at first by the notion of doing chores for a black man, but it was better than sitting around fretting over Scooter's still raw wound. That little cabin seemed to shrink a bit more every day. Shanty rode up from the river on his mule. Lige straightened and wiped sweat from his face onto his sleeve as the man dismounted.
Find your hogs all right?
Not all of them. I got a notion Mr. Fowler Gaskin's been over this way.
Damn, but I hate a thief. Somebody ought to ride over to Mr. Gaskin's and plant a load of buckshot where it'll remind him what the gospel says.
Well, it won't be me. Only reason I keep a shotgun is to kill varmints.
From what you told me, Gaskin is the biggest varmint around here.
The book says, judge not if you don't want to be judged your own self. Now and then, I get tempted. But I can't speak my mind free like if I was white.
Man, I reckon so.
You looked in on the boy?
A while ago. He was asleep. That's what he needs the most, but I don't know how much more he can get.
Well, how come?
A couple of riders came by, and I stayed in the cabin where they couldn't see me. I couldn't help thinking they're part of a posse hunting me and my boy. We need to be moving along.
Scooter's at a ticklish stage in his healing. He oughtn't be on his feet, much less in a saddle.
Well, if people keep coming by, we may not have no choice.
Well, you're all right if you stay inside. Most white folks who pass by here wouldn't go in my cabin if you was to offer them $20.
I expect the reward on me is a lot more than $20.
Shandy squinted against the sun, then lifted his hat to shade his eyes.
Looks to me like we're fixing to have some more company, Mr. Lige.
Good thing you seen him. I didn't.
Bending over as if that would make him less visible, he retreated to the cabin. Shanty tied the mule, then picked up the hoe and continued the work Lige had begun. Long before he could see the man's face, Shanty knew the visitor was Fowler Gaskin. Like Shanty, he rode a saddled mule, though a poor one that showed its ribs. Gaskin had a way of hunching over that identified him as far as a man could see him. Shanty forced a false smile.
I do, Mr. Gaskin.
Anybody here besides you?
Ain't hardly anybody stopping my place.
You heard what happened.
Ain't much to hear around this little old farm.
Fowler sat up straighter, enjoying the feeling of importance that came from being the bearer of news.
Been a killing over yonder a ways. Seems like a man and a boy was wanted for robbing a bank. When the sheriff went to arrest him, they shot him.
Wasn't Tom Blessing, was it? Oh, I sure would miss Mr. Tom.
No, he's over by the county line, by Hopper's Crossing. Been a reward posted. I wondered if you seen anybody like that lately.
Ain't seen hardly anybody at all.
I could sure use that reward money. I seen a couple of strange horses grazing out yonder a piece. Didn't know you had any horses.
Shanty began feeling nervous. He thought he saw suspicion in Gaskin's eyes.
Tain't mine. Strays following the river, I expect.
If it is me, I wouldn't let any strays be eating up my grass.
Well, horses don't know nothing about property lines. I figure somebody come along and claim them.
Maybe so. Mind if I stop at your well and get a drink?
Help yourself.
To refuse him would strengthen Gaskin's suspicion. Shanty had never refused him anything. He went on with his hoeing, but his worried gaze remained fixed on Gaskin. Gaskin brought up a bucket of water on the windlass, but took no more than a sip before dropping the bucket back into the well. He gave the cabin a long study. When he rode away, he changed direction and kept looking back over his shoulder. When he felt that Gaskin could no longer see him, Shanty laid down the hoe and went to the cabin, half trotting, half hopping on his arthritic legs. Lige came out onto the narrow porch to meet him.
Anybody we need to worry about?
It's past the worrying part. That was Mr. Fowler Gaskin, and he looked like a dog that just found a bone.
You didn't tell him nothing?
Didn't have to. He seen your horses. I'm fair certain he figured it all out for himself.
That old mule of his don't look none too swift. I could catch up to him.
Ain't you already got trouble enough?
Then me and my boy gotta get away from here before he comes back and bring some others with him.
If you try to take Scooter very far, he ain't gonna make it.
I'm willing to take my chances, but my boy, ain't there no safe place for him?
The jail.
Jail?
Sheriff Tom Blessing's jail. Mr. Tom ain't gonna let nobody touch Scooter or do him any hurt.
My boy don't belong in jail. He ain't done nothing. I'll admit I done the bank robbery like they said, but that was me, not him. He done his best to talk me out of it.
I believe you, and I bet Mr. Tom will too. He'll see that Scooter gets the right doctoring. He'll also see that nobody does him harm.
I spent the biggest part of my life trying to stay out of jail. Putting that boy into one on purpose goes against everything I believe in.
It'll be the saving of him.
Well, you're probably right, bad as I hate to think so. But if I go with him, I'll have gray whiskers down to my knees before I get out. If they don't hang me.
I can take him. It'd be easier for you to keep hiding out if you don't have the boy on your hands.
I wouldn't go far, right? I want to be where I could sort of keep an eye on things.
Mr. Rusty's place. Him being a ranger, I doubt as they do much looking around there. You could camp in the timber down on the river. If there was any news, I could come and tell you.
Lige looked as if it would not take much to make him cry.
Ain't been but a little while since I got my boy back. It's a mean thing to think about us being apart again.
Shanty could only shrug. For this, he had no answer. Scooter was too weak to get on his horse without help, but he bit his lip to keep from crying out in pain as his father lifted him up into the saddle.
We'll stay in the timber as much as we can. It's a longer trip that way, but maybe we won't run into anybody.
I'll be all right. Where are we going?
To some good folks that'll take care of you.
It was dark by the time they reached the edge of town. Lige became agitated when he saw that a number of people were out on the street.
Why aren't they at home? Even chickens know to go to roost come night.
Maybe you better not go no further.
Scooter boy, Shanty's taking you on in. I'm gonna have to quit you here.
You're not staying with me?
It's for the best this way, but I ain't going far. If anything happens, I'll be here in a jiffy.
He hugged his son, then looked away quickly, blinking. He turned to Shanty.
I ain't never had much use for your people. I always thought they was shiftless and sticky-fingered. But you done mighty fine by me, my boy. If there's anything you need,
Overcome, he simply nodded and rode off into the darkness without looking back.
Pa!
Shush, boy. You don't want the wrong people to hear you. It look like there ain't nobody coming. Let's go before somebody sees us.
Where are we going?
I told you a while ago to some good people who watch out for you.
As soon as he saw the jail, Scooter sensed the plan. He tried to turn his horse around, but Shanty caught the reins.
Hold on, boy. It's all right.
You turned me into the law?
Sheriff Tom Blessing ain't gonna hurt you, and he ain't gonna let nobody else do it. Now, you can't keep running the shape you in.
They'll try to make me tell where my daddy's at.
You don't know, so you can't tell him much. Now, let me help you down. I'll take care of your horse later.
Though Scooter was not heavy, he was almost too much for Shanty. The old man sank halfway to his knees before setting the boy on the ground.
You just hold on to me. I won't let you fall.
Shanty and Scooter hobbled to the door. In a minute, someone opened the door slowly and cautiously. The muzzle of a pistol showed first. Then Andy Pickard poked a lamp out into the darkness.
Shanty, what you doing out this time of the night?
Brought you somebody.
Scooter! Got his daddy with you?
Just a boy. He's hurt.
Andy set the lamp on the floor, then picked Scooter up and carried him inside. He laid him on a cot.
Better bar that door behind us, Shanty. Some folks from Hopper's Crossing have been hanging around looking for a chance to bust in.
Nobody knew I was bringing the boy here.
It's not Scooter they're after. Not here at the jail. We got Jace Landon here. He shot one of their kin.
But they hunting Scooter, too. He witnessed the shooting.
So I've heard. They got word out all over the country. They say his daddy murdered Sheriff Truscott.
Scooter and his daddy tell it different. They say the sheriff's own deputy done it, then throwed the blame on Mr. Lige and the boy.
Could be. How'd Scooter get shot?
That deputy. He tried to kill the both of them so they couldn't tell what he'd done.
Yeah, sounds like Big and Hopper.
That's him. That's what Pa called him.
If it was anybody else, I'd find it hard to believe. But with Biggin, I'm not surprised at anything. I'd better go wake up Tom. He's been staying in the jail ever since we brought Jace over here. Sleeps with one eye open.
Come on, and we better fetch the doctor. He treated the boy once, but he sure needs looking at again. The
doctor's already seen Scooter?
Once, out at my place.
He didn't come and tell us about it.
Well, I guess he ain't found the time. Your doctors get awful busy.
In some localities, more than others.
Andy turned to fetch Tom, only to find the sheriff behind him.
Well, I heard the door. I didn't hear any fight, so I suppose it wasn't any of the Hopper bunch busting in. I heard what Shanty had to say. From what you all had told me about this Biggin, maybe the boy's telling it straight. But we can't pass judgment. That's for the court to do.
True enough, but we've got to give the boy protection.
Sounds to me like he needed protection from his father.
That's what I tried to tell the captain when he let Lige Tennyson take Scooter away with him.
Where you reckon the old man is now?
No telling.
No matter. Our main job right now is to see that the Hoppers don't get to Jace before he's had a chance to stand trial. If they want Lige Tennyson, they'll have to find him themselves.
From what Scooter and Shanty say, Biggin's liable to want Scooter as much as he wants Jace.
Let him come and try. Ain't nobody getting into my jail unless I put him there. Do you suppose anybody saw Shanty bring the boy in?
I think somebody is watching everything we do.
Biggin Hopper was so tired that when he tried to pull the saddle and blanket from his horse's back, he dropped them. He reached down, then straightened, pressing his hand against his back in a futile effort to ease the pain.
Hell with it. Let him lay.
He slipped the bridle over the horse's ears and watched the animal turn toward the water trough. He was eager for a drink himself. It would be a mix of coffee and whiskey, light on the coffee. Carrying a lantern, Harp walked out to the corral.
It's been dark for 2 hours. I thought you never was going to give it up and come in.
If the rest of you won't go with me, I'll keep going by myself. I won't quit till I get him.
You can quit hunting for the boy, at least. We know where he's at.
Keep talking.
He's over yonder in Tom Blessing's jailhouse.
How do you know?
You recollect that you put Cousin Bim to watch in the jail so we'd know if they tried to smuggle Jace out of there? Seen an old darky bring the boy in.
How'd he know it was the right boy?
He hung around close and listened to the talk. It was the Tennyson kid, all right, and he was wounded.
Who would have wounded him?
I reckon you did. We found blood on the porch, remember? You thought you'd shot the old man, but it looks like you hit the boy instead.
Anybody see anything of the boy's daddy?
No. Well, it ain't likely he'd go far without knowing his son was going to be all right. I figure he's hiding close by, and he's apt to be killing mad. Was I you, I'd be keeping four walls around me and no windows. That broad back of yours makes a good target.
Biggin shivered at the thought of a bullet smashing between his shoulder blades, severing his spine and setting him afire. It could happen if Tennyson was the crack shot he had claimed to be.
We could just figure some way to smoke him out.
You told me an old darky brought the boy in. You know who he was?
Bim never heard his name. But I've been thinking about that old man Gaskin. He said he had a notion where Tennyson and the boy was at. Wondered how much we'd pay for the information and if we'd let him have some of it in advance.
Yeah, I remember. Everybody said he was just a lying old drunk always looking to get money without having to work for it. I gave him a cussing and sent him on his way.
Maybe you cussed him too soon. It just come to me that he said he thought they was hiding out with a darky. Could have been the same one that brought the boy to town.
You knew that and you still stood by and let me run Gaskin off?
Thinking ain't exactly my long suit. I leave most of that to you.
I reckon you could find out where Gaskin lives. I'd get him to take us to that darky.
He oughtn't to be real hard to find. He's got a reputation.
Well, then get at it.
Fowler Gaskin's place looked about as big and expected.
I never could understand how some people can live in a pigsty. He ain't crippled, is he, Harp?
From what I heard, the only thing crippled about him is his ambition.
Gaskin! Come out here before this leaning pile of horse apples you call a house falls down around you!
Gaskin ventured as far as the doorway, peering into visitors through pinched eyes.
Who's that hollering?
Come out here. I want to talk to you.
Gaskin reached back inside the door and brought out a shotgun. Big and tensed, wondering if the old reprobate had the guts to fire it.
I remember you. You talked awful mean to me. I got no business with you now.
Biggin pushed his horse forward and wrested the shotgun from Gaskin's weak and trembling hands.
Yes, you do. You said you knew where we could find Lige Tennyson.
I said I thought I knew, and you cussed me out like I was a nigger. I don't like nobody treating me that way.
How much would it take to make you change your mind?
A sight more than I asked you the last time.
How do we know Tennyson is still there?
You don't, but if he's gone, I'll cut the price in half.
Biggin reached down and grabbed a handful of Gaskin's shirt. He yanked the old man up against the horse.
You greedy old robber. I'll pay you what I figure the information is worth and not a damn dollar more.
You wouldn't treat me this way if my boys were still here. They died fighting for the South.
The war's over, old man. We got a new one now.
He gave Gaskin a push that almost made him fall backward.
Go saddle your horse. You're taking us to that darky.
I ain't got a horse. All I got is a pokey old mule.
That'll do. Saddle him or ride bareback. I don't care which.
Looking back in anxiety, Gaskin trotted awkwardly toward the barn. Biggin tossed the shotgun through the cabin's open door.
Harp, I ought to shoot the old rascal on general principle.
I doubt that many folks would show up for the funeral.
Gaskin led the saddled mule from the corral. He'd regained a little of his bluster, but not much.
I'll be telling Tom Blessing about this. He don't let people come into his county and mistreat the voters.
Stop the talk and get on the mule and ride.
Biggin was a little surprised by the neatness of Shanty's little farm. The garden and the field had been hoed. The crops looked healthy in contrast to Gaskin's. Shanty was standing in front of a small frame shed, brushing a mule's back. He tried for a smile, but couldn't mask his uneasiness.
Gaskin, is this the man who harbored Tennyson and the boy?
I'd bet $1,000.
Shh, you never saw $1,000. You there! We know you took the Tennyson boy to town. Where's his daddy?
I ain't got no ID.
Biggin swung his quirt, striking Shanty across the shoulder.
I ain't got no patience to play games with you, boy. Where's he at?
I swear, mister, I don't know.
That ain't the answer I want to hear. Now you try again.
I can't tell what I don't know.
Oh, these old darkies lie to you every time. Give me that quirt. I'll put the fear of God into him.
You back away, Gaskin, before I use the quirt on you.
He struck Shanty across the back. The old man flinched, shaking, but did not fall.
I've been telling you the truth. That's all I could do.
Began raised the quirt again. Harp caught his arm.
You're fixing to kill him. You don't want another killing on your conscience.
What do you mean, another killing?
I expect you know what I mean.
Who you been listening to? Somebody been making talk?
There are several wondering why you want that old man and his boy so bad, seeing as they eliminated Oscar Truscott and got you the sheriff's job.
Is that them talking or is it just you?
I'm just telling you what some folks are saying.
Don't you be listening to people who make idle talk. You just listen to me.
Gaskin understood none of the conversation. He watched, frustrated.
Are you quitting? You just fixing to ride away without him telling you what you came to find out?
Looks to me like he's told all he knows. No use beating a dead horse.
He ain't dead yet. I'll make him talk.
Gaskin got down from his mule. Shandy drew his arms in tightly as Gaskin moved toward him. Biggin pushed his horse between the two men.
Gaskin, get back on your mule.
He raised the quirt for emphasis. Gaskin backed away.
I've done my part. You owe me.
Biggin felt like quirting Gaskin, but instead he dug a silver dollar from his pocket. He tossed it to the ground in front of the man. Gaskin picked up the coin, flushed in anger.
A dollar? Is this all just $1?
It's a dollar more than you're worth. You don't want it, I'll take it back.
Gaskin put the coin in his pocket. Biggin shook the quirt at him.
Now get away from here before I give you what you really got coming. You know what, Harp? I hate a man who would betray his neighbor for money.
Hunched in pain, Shandy watched as Gaskin got a handhold on the mule's ragged mane and pulled himself up.
Mr. Fowl, my old dog died. But I'm fixing to get me another one.
Your old dog was worthless. What do you want another one for?
So that if you ever come messing around my place again, I can sick him on you.
Gaskin's face colored. He turned to Biggin and Harp.
You're gonna let a nigger talk to a white man that way?
I don't see no white man. Let's go, Harp.
In the midst of Biggin's frustration, an idea began struggling to break free. Harp was about to speak, but Biggin raised a hand to stop him, to keep him from interrupting his thoughts before the idea was fully hatched.
They still got the same old wooden jailhouse in this town?
Not much ever changes here.
I spent a night in that place once years ago. They said I was drunk and disorderly.
Was you?
I expect so. I ain't been back in that town since. I decided not to give them any more of my business.
It's their loss now.
How many people they got standing guard at the jail during the night?
Generally a night watchman patrolling the street outside, three rangers and the sheriff sleep inside. The deputy usually goes home.
That ought not to be hard to take care of the watchman. A couple of guns at the front door and one or two at the back could keep anybody who's inside from coming out.
What good will it do you if they stay inside? You couldn't get at them.
That old jail is mostly built out of lumber. Now, say a fire was to start along the outside wall, that thing'd go up fast, and if them on the inside couldn't get out, well, wouldn't that be a shame?
Harp stared slack-jawed, awed by Biggin's audacity.
First, I'd like to know just what's going on in that place. I need a man to see inside. I want you to find somebody who'll do anything for $50.
Yeah, there's plenty of them around.
This has to be somebody Jason or nobody in that jail would recognize. Somebody who wouldn't mind getting a little drunk and disorderly and spending a night or two in the hoosegow. But somebody we can rely on.
That's some combination.
You find him.
You're going to a lot of trouble just to get rid of Jace Landon.
That boy, too. Let something happen to him, and like as not, his old daddy would come running. All I need is one clear shot. Now, let's go where I can get me a bottle of whiskey. I got some thinking to do.
Andy was pleased at Rusty's attitude. He seemed to be leaning Andy's way in regard to Scooter. Tom Blessing was still trying to make up his mind.
Well, the boy's fevered. Maybe he really saw what he says happened. Or maybe it's the fever made him think he did. No jury's gonna take his word against the lawman's.
Even a good lawman goes bad once in a while. And Biggin's been a counterfeit from the start.
I've known some lawmen who were bad to start with. Others learned it on their own, but I can't believe anything as cold-blooded as this boy tells about.
Whether it's real or he imagined it, Scooter's better off in here till everything settles into place. If Biggin did kill Truscott, he'll be looking to silence the boy. If it was Lige that did it, he'll probably stay around close so he can know what's happening to Scooter. That gives us a better chance to catch him.
Scooter lay on a steel cot in one of the cells. The iron-barred door was left open, for he was not technically a prisoner. Flora sat on the edge of the cot, keeping a damp cloth on the boy's head. She had all but adopted Scooter as soon as she first saw him. She'd never had a child of her own. Jace feigned jealousy, but he was as taken with the boy as his wife was.
Darling girl, you're paying more attention to that boy than to your poor old neglected husband.
He's younger, he's better looking, and he's got nothing on his conscience.
Well, he will have by the time he gets a little older. Show me somebody who's got nothing on his conscience, and I'll show you somebody who spent his life asleep.
Jace Landon had talked Tom into bringing a couple of forked tree branches to his cell so he could fashion a set of crutches for Scooter. Now he had a pile of wood shavings in the cell. He had trimmed away the bark and smoothed the surface with a pocket knife borrowed from Tom.
Tom, these things will need some cloth wrapping to see if they don't rub sores under his arms. Otherwise, they're finished.
If they're finished, I'll thank you to give me back that knife.
The sheriff extended his hand. Jace shot him an embarrassed smile. He handed the knife back through the bars.
Sorry. Almost forgot.
Andy knew Jace had not forgotten anything, but he had hoped the sheriff would. Tom Blessing seldom forgot anything important.
I'll finish them up.
She started back toward Jace's cell, but Tom stopped her. He had never allowed her within reaching distance of her husband.
I'll bring the crutches to you. Slide them out here, Jace. I appreciate what you two are doing for the boy, but I can't afford much trust. Given the slightest chance, I think you'd be out of here like a turpentine cat.
I told you that when I first came.
Flora wrapped cotton cloth around the top of the crutches as padding.
Feel like giving him a try, Scooter?
The boy turned himself around and cautiously put one foot on the floor. He had to use both hands to get the other leg into place. His face twisted with pain. Andy hurried to help him.
Does it hurt?
Sure hurts. But lift me up and see if I can fit them things under my arms.
He was wobbly. Andy kept hold of him so he wouldn't fall.
Oh, I feel like I'm going down flat on my face. A little dizzy, too.
Well, don't be in a hurry. It'll take you a while to get the knack. Rusty, what'd you find out about that bunch of riders who came to town this morning?
They were just Mexican traders bringing a string of half-broke horses to sell the farmers hereabouts. There wasn't a hopper amongst them.
Strangers worry me, but the merchants wouldn't abide me turning them back at the edge of town. Visitors bring in money.
It wouldn't be hard for a bunch of the hoppers to slip into town at night. They'd love to get a clean shot at Jace.
Well, that's why I put him in a cell that ain't got no windows. As long as he stays there, he's as safe as in church. Then, after the judge gets here...
Andy frowned. Flora did not deserve to be reminded constantly that her husband had an appointment with a rope.
I need some fresh air. I think I'll go take me a little walk around town.
Keep watching over your shoulder, Andy. I wouldn't put it past the hoppers to grab one of us and try to make a swap for Jace.
I hadn't thought of that. If that happened, what would you do?
We're responsible for keeping Jace from harm till he's had his day in court. If it meant having to sacrifice one of us, that's what we're paid for. It's part of being a ranger.
I'll be careful.
Before you go, would you mind letting that drunk out of his cell? I expect two nights and they have sobered him up good.
The man had raised a ruckus in a saloon where things were usually so quiet the place could almost be taken for a Sunday school. Not wanting the burden of extra prisoners during this time of potential trouble, Tom had tried to let him off with a warning. At that point, the drunk had thrown a chair through a glass window, and Tom no longer had a choice. Property must be respected, whether saloon or church house. Andy unlocked the cell and beckoned with his thumb.
You had enough free meals. Sheriff says he doesn't want to see anything but the backside of you leaving town.
The man picked up his hat. He'd brought nothing else in with him. He rubbed his chin and ambled on out. Andy followed him out into the sunshine. The former prisoner blinked against the brightness and looked up and down the street. In a minute, he was gone. The weather was still warm, but with each passing day, the sun edged a little farther to the south. The smell of fall was in the air for a while in early morning, though summer still ruled later in the day. Andy wondered how winter's cold would affect Scooter's healing. Farley Brackett sat on the jail step, whittling a scrap piece of pine down to a pile of shavings that littered the ground at his feet. The cuts and bruises on his face were healing.
Where you headed, Badger Boy?
Just taking a look around.
What are you looking for?
I don't know exactly.
If you don't know what you're looking for, how you gonna know it when you see it?
Maybe you ought to go with me and help me look.
Can't. Guard in the front door. If you get yourself into any trouble, Badger Boy, you'll have to fight your own way out.
You just watch me.
Oh, I'll be watching you, all right. But don't expect me to come running. Last time I did that, I got myself shot.
Andy wanted to think of a good retort, but none came, so he didn't try for the last word. He walked through an open gate in the fence that surrounded the courthouse and jail. He stopped a minute to look up and down the dirt street. Before many more days, it would be bustling as farmers in mule-drawn wagons began hauling the first of their cotton crop to town for ginning. Farm families with fresh money in their pockets would be crowding in to buy clothes and other necessities for the coming winter. Right now, the street looked about the same as he had known it during the years since his return from the Comancheria, except that the town had grown. He saw nothing to be concerned about. Andy walked on down the street with no particular mission in mind, except to look for something or somebody that seemed out of place. He peered into the mercantile store and saw no one except the storekeeper and a woman customer. Andy thought about what Farley had said. He didn't know who he was looking for. How would he know him when he saw him? Down at the livery stable toward the end of the street, a man sat in a straight chair leaned back against the door. Andy at first took him to be the proprietor, but after a closer look realized he didn't know the man. Yet the face seemed vaguely familiar. The man stared back, his eyes not friendly. Andy walked over.
Howdy. Seems like I ought to know you. Your name would be Hopper, wouldn't it?
Might be.
A while back, me and Farley Brackett were on our way to deliver Jace Landon to the sheriff at Hopper's Crossing. You were the bunch that tried to stop us.
That might be, too.
So what are you doing here?
Gotta be somewhere.
Not here unless you've got business. What's your business?
I've got a wife who bitches at me all the time. I come over here now and then to get drunk without her knowing about it. Any law against that?
You ain't drunk. I think you better move on out of town.
Look, Ranger, I'm spending good money here and I come by it honest. If I broke any laws, tell me. If I ain't, then leave me the hell alone.
Andy was losing the argument and he knew it. He had no grounds for running Hopper out of town. If he did so anyway, he might be subject to legal action. If he didn't, and somebody got hurt, he'd be blamed for not acting when he had the chance. It was enough to make him wonder why he had chosen to be a ranger. For a moment, he considered going back to the jail and asking Rusty what he should do. But he had leaned on Rusty far too many times. Sooner or later, he had to begin deciding such matters for himself.
Watch yourself.
I always do. And them that's around me.
Andy returned to the jail. Farley still sat on the step. He had a new piece of wood to whittle on. The earlier one lay scattered in curled shavings on the ground.
I'll bet you didn't know we were being watched.
I know. Bim Hopper's sitting over yonder at the stable. He spied on us for several days.
You knew about him all that time?
Spotted him as soon as he showed up. I got to know Bim pretty good when Biggin and his bunch drug me away from my mother's place. He's got mean eyes and fists hard as pine knot. I'm waiting for him to make a wrong move so I can shoot his ear off. Maybe his big toe. Something he'll remember me by.
He says he's in town to get drunk.
He ain't been drunk since he came here. He's watching for us to let our guard down so him and his cousins can storm the jail and drag Jace out. I hope they try. It'll be the best fight I've been in since I shot the hell out of the state police.
This ain't some kind of entertainment show. There could be dead men laying out in the street.
The world could get along just fine without some of them Hoppers. They're a nest of vipers.
They might not be the only ones killed.
Have you taken a good look at that old jail? It ain't pretty, but it's bull stout. A whole regiment couldn't bust in without they had a cannon.
Andy was not pacified, but arguing with Farley was like trying to converse with a fence post. He went on up and entered the jail. Rusty glanced up at him.
You see anything?
There's a man watching us from over at the stable.
Yeah, a cousin of Big and Hopper. We've been keeping an eye on him.
How come you didn't tell me about it?
We thought we'd see how long it took for you to spot him yourself.
Irritated, Andy realized he was being tested, like he was a new recruit. After consideration, he realized the description fit. He stood small against experienced lawmen like Rusty and Tom, even Farley.
And we ought to run him off?
It's better we leave him where we can watch what he's up to. The time to worry is when we can't see him.
Andy went to the window and looked up and down the street again.
Well, there's one thing you didn't know.
And what?
That drunk we just let out of jail? He's over yonder talking to Bim Hopper.
Rusty and Tom both moved quickly to the window.
Well, I'll be damned. Looks like we've had a spy in our midst.
Looks like.
Big and Hopper looked back to be sure nobody had deserted him. He had twisted arms to the breaking point to get the six men who accompanied him on this punitive expedition. It wouldn't take much of a scare to send most of them scurrying back to Hopper's Crossing. The only ones he felt he could depend on were Cousins Harp and Bim, and even those would bear some watching. The wagon jolted along behind with several cans of coal oil he'd brought. He couldn't afford to buy it locally because he'd be remembered and the finger of blame would be pointed straight at him. At dusk, they were within a half mile of town.
Let's pull over into them trees yonder. We'll wait till the dark of the moon.
Cousin Wilbur pulled his horse in beside Biggins.
Closer we get, the less I like this whole notion. I'm in favor of us getting Jace, but there's other people in that jailhouse too. We could be charged with murdering them all.
Not unless we get caught. They can suspicion all they want, but suspicion don't hold no water in court. Anyway, I told Ollie what we're gonna do, so I ain't letting you back out now.
According to Bim, there's a kid in that jail. What about him?
Now you just remember, he's an outlaw's boy, and he was in on the killing of Oscar Truscott. He's probably got the mark of a noose around his neck anyway.
I still don't like it.
Biggin grabbed his cousin's shirt just below the throat and shook the man harshly.
Any more of that talk, I'll see that you walk all the way home. Now everyone just dismount and settle till we do this. Uncle Judd gave us a warrant for Jace's arrest.
Does Uncle Judd's jurisdiction reach over into another county's jailhouse?
He's a judge, ain't he?
If Uncle Judd approves, I reckon it's all right.
Actually, Biggin had told his uncle only that they were going after Jace. He had thought it wise not to tell the judge that Jace might be only one of the casualties, that others might include a couple or three rangers, possibly even a sheriff. The old man could get downright unreasonable about anything that might bring state investigators in to snoop around. He had some skeletons of his own that were not buried deeply enough for comfort.